Channel one over, channel one over, channel one over, and the beginning of the visit with Debbie with me talking to this Wednesday after supper, the 8th of January, 75. Channel one over, beginning of the visit with Debbie with me talking to this Wednesday after supper, the 8th of January, 75. Channel one over, beginning of the visit with Debbie with me talking to this Wednesday after supper, the 8th of January, 75.
I have plenty. I really do. That looks good, but I have plenty.
Get some cookies.
Oh, now, cookie I'll have.
I'm going to give you a cookie. You don't need that.
Those are the best cookies I ever had.
What cookie?
The Faith had some over with Barbara the other night. Okay. Yeah, they're really good. They are really good.
You might have been quick to share.
A friend of yours is going to come visit a week from Friday.
From New York?
Mm-hmm.
How is she going to take off?
She's got in between her semesters. She's going to come down again. She'll be here for a week. I talked to her when she called. About agents. They had said something to me about asking her. And she said that she doesn't really know anybody in publishing much anymore.
Yeah.
To talk to. But they still have the copy of the manuscript that we sent up there a year ago. They never sent it back.
Yeah.
And I asked them. I've written everything.
You're gonna stay up all night and what is it?
Probably.
You have to wake in the morning and sleep all and stay up all night.
Yeah, that'll be a little. It'll be a little different this time because I have to go to work. But anyway, I brought you this letter. You've been wanting it. That's that letter that Tom Horan wrote to me about all the different writing programs and how to go to a writing program you just had to pick out who it was that you wanted to write like and then go there. And he's got all these names listed in there that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
Never heard of any of them. Be sort of hard to pick somebody that you wanted to write like because if you don't know anyone.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Good deal.
Yeah, it's, I like my introduction to the writing craft. We had just a little country workshop. We sat around and read papers, mimeographed them, and we read them ahead of time and talked about them. And that was the finest thing I ever did. That was in Kentucky when I was working in Kentucky. And I have nothing but play. And then they all had such a light touch. They didn't have any of these professionals who'd come around and try to horn in. There wasn't enough going on to distract them. Bob Coffin was one of the finest. But I don't know, it sort of brought out the best of a lot of them. Jim Still was a fine one. He never got out of Kentucky.
I didn't have a chance to look at the thing on the snake holders. I just realized it. I can't read it.
Well, it's interesting. It won a prize, but it's not been printed. It's too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then the attitude is slightly, I won't talk about it unless you want to read it.
It looked like a feature article. I just glanced at it. I didn't read it. I just glanced at it while I was zoo-assing it. Like she'd written it.
I don't know what it would be. What would you classify? I just call it a plain article.
Yeah. Well, an article that's fact, not fiction.
Yeah.
I'm reading that book about the Watergate business.
Oh.
All the President's Men. It's written by the two reporters for the Post.
Yeah.
Who did it. And that's like, it's all fact, but it's just like reading a novel, a spy novel.
Oh, really?
I don't know whether it's just that reporters write like fiction now, or what it is, but it's just, you can't believe it's real, that it all really happened like that when you read it.
Yeah.
Somebody gave it to me and said, you ought to read this, and I thought, oh, poo, I'm not going to read this, not going to waste my time, and I haven't been able to stop.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's just fascinating. They all knew right from the beginning, from the very beginning, they all knew all about it. That's what you can't believe, but it was going back to her thing. It's fact in journalism, but it reads like fiction.
Sure.
Only not good fiction. Except it moves along. They don't.
Well, you know, the news magazines are written like fiction too. They catch hold of you. No, there's an objection to that. You read it like fiction, and you don't, you lose your judgment, your critical. Or you come home, pick up time, read the state of Vietnam, and as an entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that's not what you were talking about.
Well, it's almost what I was talking about, because it's too bad they're making all this Watergate business into, everybody's writing a book about it, everybody that was involved in it is writing a book about it, my side of the Watergate story, and they're going to make a movie of it, and all the impact, what really happened, is going to be lost in all of this propaganda that's coming out afterwards. No.
There's three of them, Dean and two of the others were out.
By him and Sirica. Well, I don't want to take all your time. I just wanted to bring that over and make sure you were still back here in the country.
Tell Faye to come here and sit around.
Okay.
I'll call her. Faye? Didn't know you were here. Faye? Dad?
lighting a fire at 65, 70. You aren't lighting a fire. Are you lighting a fire? You're not lighting a fire.
No, it's damp in there. You know, dampish.
This is mammoth. Where did you get this?
That's one of the J.R. Mountains.
Huge.
He heated his house with it for 18 years.
Well, we used to have one that had a grate in the front.
Yeah, it's got one.
Oh, it does? You can just open this?
Yeah.
Well, it works? Now that's what I need. Because I'm stuck with that little electric heater.
Well, I've got this oil heater here. You're welcome to one of the deals.
Check that out. Hmm. The tank for oil over there at the house. I guess they used to have one there. Hmm. Wow.
Yes, satisfactory. The only reason I got rid of it, it didn't have one of the heat rings in it. And it didn't, burn all the fuel. So the smoke went out the chimney.
Pollutant air.
Well, I like to live on the bottom.
But the more you use.
Well, it really warm up your room.
Well, my house, it doesn't take much to heat. I said what I have to do is cover the windows with plastic, because that door in the back, in the kitchen, is wide open all the time, and it's crazy to even try to heat the house because the door is wide open. There's this much space in between the louvers, they don't shut, and then between the door and the frame, there's this much, so there's just a draft pouring in all the time. Well, I just need a little piece of plastic to cover up the window. Of course, then
sure.
I can't open the window. But I guess that's what you caulk all these windows shut.
You just have one.
Oh.
But I don't prefer caulking windows.
Well,
you can see out.
Yeah. Big sheet of clear plastic. That's what I need. Well, Russell's coming next week.
No.
Yeah.
Time off.
Yeah. Time for her semester break. She called night before last, and I said, "Russell, when are you coming?" And she said, "I may never come. I have an exam tomorrow morning. I have an exam Wednesday night. I have an exam Friday night. I have an exam the Monday after that, and I have a brief to write. I may never come." If she gets through with all of that, she'll be here next Friday night, late, on the late plane.
Well, now, what will she do when she comes down? You'll just talk?
We generally just talk. We don't stop. The whole time. Late at night, too. I remember last year. Russell, like on Russell's vacation, she likes to stay up till about 3 in the morning and then sleep until noon. Well, I can't. I'm not going to get much sleep that week, I don't think.
You might. She just might change her schedule.
Well, it depends. I don't know.
You need to substitute someone to stand in for you by the time.
Oh, I wouldn't let anybody stand in for me. I wouldn't miss it. But I don't know if we can go on till 3 in the morning.
Well, I remember the last time you were ready.
The last
if anybody wants Russell back, take him.
she left on Saturday, and I just totally collapsed and had to go to bed for 24 hours.
That's right.
I did. That's amazing. Well, I told her she had a bicycle, and she could just ride wherever she wanted to on a bicycle. How does it work?
Sure.
Or she can drive me in and have my car. Or I could ride the bicycle in.
Anyway, from what I hear, that's what will happen.
That would be something, wouldn't it? Not only would I stay up till 3 in the morning, I'd have to leave an hour before to get to work on time. I can't wait till she gets here.
Well, I have two bones to pick with her. She's
delinquent. I know. I told her that, and she said she knew she was, and that you just happened. She said that she got a nice letter from you, and that you happened to get her at the time when she was writing something or other, and she just never answered it. And she said she'll let you pick the bone with her when she gets here. She said she didn't really know anybody right now to refer us to. But we can talk to her again when she's here.
Well, we talked to her last time. Everybody just let her rest. This girl, this thing on the snake analyst, she writes fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And she took this up herself. she went to some of the writing conferences. I don't know what she got. I didn't hear her talking about her much. But she's just in love with tape. She does her own. She tapes and all. And she just doesn't want to miss a word of it. And he has a big family and all, and if he doesn't let his family that way. I got the idea she was kind of losing interest in the fiction. More interested in this. Her attitude in this is interesting, too.
We couldn't get Fay off the telephone. She had the flu. And Guy and Fay couldn't go see her. Well, she couldn't come see them because she had all this bad flu. But she could talk on the telephone.
So, you know, I wouldn't do the whole story. I just added a little thing just for the sake. She cares if it's too far.
Don't mention it, just don't. And the federal government takes so much of my salary and they're not going to give any of it back. They're going to keep it all. I know that. You know what? Well.
And that was the moment it said. He could get a few numbers up for me today. You miss that? That's talk Debbie misses, I bet you.
Yeah.
We have it.
Yeah.
Your oats are up and
they are.
Yes, and they are just beautiful.
Oh.
That beautiful strip of green over there. Just that rich green. Barbara was pasturing them. I let a little copy of Ms. 18 in yesterday. Cows like it more than the horses. The horses kind of picky. I don't even see them out there eating, do you?
Well,
get a few bites.
The Philly and Molly were in last night, and all right, Barbara says they eat a little bit and then go stand on the shade.
Yeah.
They don't like to eat in the sunshine. But it is pretty. I wish it was where we could see it.
Yeah, it's way back up there. That's why I noticed that I came over last weekend to see Stacy. I didn't even notice it because it was back so far. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you got mustard down there too.
Yeah.
Did Izell come to talk to you? He's gonna. I went down to Miss Daisy, but she was holding court last weekend, and she really looked good when I saw her twice, and the first time she really looked good, and the second time I think she was tired because so many people had come to see her. But she was sitting up in her chair, and Izell was sitting in the corner practically going to sleep because it was warm, and he just had something to eat. He kept, his head kept nodding over like this, and then he'd get a little warm in here, and then would go down again. And he said that he was going to come up here and talk to Mr. Miles, and I said, oh, you are? And he said, yeah, that he thought he'd just put him something in up on the hill up there. And I just said, oh. He said he just thought he'd come up and talk to you next week, Sunday next week. And I said, well, he'd just do that.
Well, I'll have to turn him over to Barbara and let her deal with it.
I love Izell. He's so sweet. I mean, that's a bad word to use, but he's something about, Miss Daisy said that Aaron had gone to town, and she'd expected that. She knew he was going to go when he got ready, and she expected him to go, and she came back from the hospital, and they said, Cousin Daisy, Aaron's gone. And she said, well, she just expected that. She knew he'd get ready and go. And she said she reckoned he, and Izell said, I reckon he got him a woman up there. And again, I reckon he got him a wife up there. And Miss Daisy said, no, he don't. Like, no, he don't like that. And Izell said, well, a woman or a wife, one. Miss Daisy said, he don't. And Izell said, well, I just call him a wife. He said, I don't need a wife. He said, what do I need a wife for? I can take care of myself. And Miss Daisy said, you've got all that room over there. What do you need a wife for? And he said, that's right. I just go, sometimes I stay a while, but when I get ready to leave, I leave.
Really?
No, he's got that girlfriend that he had last year that picked peanuts.
Took care of him when he had came out.
When I just go, I might stay a while, but when I get ready to leave, I'll leave. I come home and go to bed. He's so cute. Oh.
Somebody said Izell was on the kitchen machine.
He is. That's what he said. He said he had to go up there. He couldn't work anymore, and he had to go up and be on the machine next. He said, I think he said every other day. It's a lot. Yeah. Yeah, he can't drive a tractor. He said he couldn't, but you see the handwriting on the wall. The second person that was down there with Miss Daisy, I don't know who it was. He was dressed up. I thought maybe he was a preacher because he was all dressed up. Maybe he'd just been to church. But he was he said he'd been knowing Miss Daisy since 1932, I think. And then they got going on the modern generation, and both of them raised their voices over that for a while, and they didn't talk about anything else but how nobody worked for their money anymore. And when he used to work, he'd work all day, and I mean work, and he'd take home 25 cents in his hand and be glad of it. I love that.
You didn't see Gracie?
Gracie, no.
She's one of the old guard around here. She took off to Miami. Her daughter or somebody was down there. But she really belongs up here. And I hated to see her go. That's thinning out too fast.
Well, she's the one, and she'll be back. She's gone up to Kentucky now.
Oh yeah.
Oh, she can clean.
Oh, that's the cleanest house.
I do. They have good skill.
I was down there the day after Gracie came, and she had everything that Daisy had out in the middle of the floor, and she was scrubbing it. You've never seen anything shine like that house or shine like Daisy. She's the one that said Daisy had diabetes, and she better get to a doctor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie, how long did the flu take out of circulation?
About a week.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, I'm grateful I had it. I caught up on all my sleep.
Yeah.
I was worn out by the time Christmas came, and then Christmas hit me on the head like a mallet. And you know, then after Christmas, I got sick and just slept for straight round the clock for about 4 days, and I'm fit again.
Yeah. You didn't even need to read.
Read. That's all I did was read when I wasn't sleeping.
Yeah. Read and sleep.
Read and sleep.
How about that?
And eat soup.
Hmm.
But it didn't leave you feeling like it did me.
No, it wasn't the same kind.
Mm-hmm.
It was over much, much faster.
You read Jim McConkie's Crossroads, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Last summer.
Yeah.
We never talked about it.
Jim?
Mm-hmm.
Well? He's pretty close to what we did out here. Except, whatever he does it well. He doesn't have the experiences to write about. It's a
mm-hmm.
It's almost made up experience. Not like Cookie Steve Mountain.
I haven't heard it, man.
That's one of the few he did where he's circumstantial about his trip. He spent 20-30 minutes right up in Sheep Mountain with me holding him there. Both of us together managed to stay up there. Pennsylvania, you know, he didn't show you much.
Mm-hmm.
But this one he did. I took that with me. I played it 2 or 3 times. And I enjoyed it.
I let her, you read.
Well, that leads right into his experience is much more circumstantial, much more interesting than the thing that was reported on Dudley. The medical missionary reported on it, and that I reported on.
The best.
Ted said an interesting thing after that, that, you know, he was there when you read it, and he said that he said he couldn't tell when you were talking and when you were reading, and I said, well, that's the whole point. That's what he's doing and what he's writing. But
yeah, if anyone would just read it that way, it'd be nice.
Right.
Yeah, that was a
well. He, I mean,
good comment.
He saw that much in it.
I should have got in on some of his camera work, but I never did. I always figured he was so far along, you know, he wouldn't.
Well, not necessarily. He's very good. And he's also very he can talk to people. I mean, not he's not shy, you know, retiring, he'll go out there and talk to people. Well, they're gone now, so.
Oh, have they pulled out?
Yep. Kentucky. Louisville, Kentucky. From whence there are no jobs in the one hand. Trying to know what they can do.
Well, that's a curious situation to be in, isn't it? So talented and so well qualified. And everything stands still. He entertained himself all last summer.
Yeah.
He can't go along doing that forever.
Well, he would if he could. Well, he certainly would. It's too bad he can't write about what he did.
Yeah.
But of course, I don't know that he did very much that you really need to write about. It's really the kind of thing that should be visually artistic, or he took pictures. And he rode his bicycle 2,000 miles.
Tibet.
Tibet. Just all the way to Tibet and back. He went from Canada to Mexico through the mountains. Yeah.
He and how many others?
Just him, by himself.
My daddy?
Yeah. He wanted Bridget to go with him. Bridget said, I wouldn't make it to Payne's Prairie, you go. She doesn't like to ride her bike that far. So she went to Chicago for the summer, and he took his bike trip, and then they came back, and they were going to just get something here in Gainesville and stay. And Ted was going to try to do something with all the photographs that he did over the summer, and they just couldn't get anything to do here. So they wouldn't even hire Bridget, because they told her that her husband had a master's degree and was unemployed, so they wouldn't hire her, because obviously they were leaving.
Well, did they have to know everything?
Well, I guess. Right. Exactly. I don't know. They did. So they didn't hire her.
you also have to tell the whole story. You always frame things and make them more presentable.
Well, I don't expect to have expect to have any privacy now that I've applied for a Bank of America card. It's terrible. I tore up a MasterCard charge and a Bank of America just last fall because I just wouldn't have them. And now we find out you have to have one if you want to cash a check anyway.
Mm.
So I applied and it's, it's really something.
You still don't have one?
No, it still hadn't come. Maybe they're going to turn us down. So wait before Christmas.
Watch out.
Well, I was slanted by the barber. I didn't have quite enough money to get around and go my rounds. It's a good thing because I had to buy, I got a book of stamps. And they sell you a $4 book of stamps now. $1 and a half. And you said, he'd cash a check for me. That's my new barber, Mr. Weaver, played out on me down in Macintosh. He's good. As you can tell. I know he's stick up for you, but he's good. Look like a ghost too.
I shouldn't see it. You know, I think this is enough right over here. Well, he's got the habit. As soon as he gets the haircut, no matter who cuts it,
yeah,
he watches his head.
Right to the shower.
To my druggist down there, and I said, I don't know, but I think my, I remember my family got the barber's head. Oh, he said. So he came down from behind the back. He himself came down. He didn't send me out to look for it. He said, I'll just see if I can just fix you up. And he gave me a choice of 2 or 3 things. He told me 2 or 3 times how to use it.
Speaking of barbers, the last time I saw Marie and Pierre, Pierre was had got his hair cut, and he got his beard trimmed a little bit, and he got a haircut, and he said, you know, in France, when you get your hair cut, you're in the barber, you're in the chair for an hour. They do things. And here, 15 minutes and you're through. And then I said, oh, well, did they do a good job? And he kind of touched it. They got absolutely inundated for Christmas from France. Right after, Christmas week, I guess, I got this telephone call that they had a package at Ryder Truck. And could I come over and take them to get it? And I said, sure, because this is their Christmas from France. And I said, sure. Ryder Truck, I thought they were kidding. I thought Ryder Truck rented little trailers for you to move around in. But they also are a private trucking thing. Well, this package, because there had been a strike in France, a postal strike all fall, this package, I believe, rode to America like a person on a plane.
Oh.
It was sent privately on a plane and then privately trucked from Jacksonville over here.
Oh.
And they got it, this little package, you know, and Pierre's holding it, looking to see if it's long enough to be a bottle of wine. Well, they got so many little tins about this big of pâté de foie gras, you just wouldn't believe that his parents and her parents and grandparents, and that's all they sent them was food, things to eat.
So they weren't having any food.
That's all they sent them. And they sent them box after box after box of marron glacé, whole, the whole chestnut. I never ate one in France. They were too dear. We just got the kind that was already all crumbled up in a little paper that you buy on the street. We never got the whole ones. Well, they had about four boxes of the whole ones. And the crowning thing was they got a little can about this big, about this high, truffle. They got a can of truffles. And I said, Marie, what are you going to do with that little tiny can? This probably has one truffle in it. And she said, well, they'd make a sauce with it or something. That's Christmas in France. Things to eat, food.
Well, and she knows what to do with it all.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be taking a trip.
They did.
Oh, they did.
They went to New Orleans. My heart was in my throat. Believe me, I was worried like a mother hen the whole time they were gone. I just had visions of them never returning from New Orleans. I took them to the bus station. They decided, well, they call me. Pierre doesn't like to talk on the telephone. And when he called me once at the office, and he got Bob, and Bob had met him. We'd all gone out to dinner one night together. And so Bob answered the phone, and he said, I'm sorry, Debbie's, I was on the, talking to somebody else on the phone, and he said, I'm sorry, Debbie's on the phone. And this, he said, this little voice said, I'm French, I'm French. Bob said, Pierre, is that you? I'm French, I'm French. He was scared. I know how he feels. I know how he feels. But he never calls, but Marie calls sometimes. Well, anyway, she called and she said that they wanted to go to New Orleans, and we had talked about this trip that they were going to take, and they were going to take the bus because they thought they'd see something on the bus. And I thought, well, they're going to see the truck route of every city between here and New Orleans. But let them take the bus. And so they said they couldn't read the schedule, and could I come by and read the schedule for them? So I said, sure. And they weren't sure when they'd go, but they thought they'd go that night. And so I called the bus station and got the schedules and went over, and they decided that they would take the 11 o'clock bus that night, and they'd ride all night and get in the next morning. And so I said, okay, that I'd come back and take them to the bus. So I did.
Ride all night?
Yeah.
And see things?
And see things. So I took them to the bus. Well, they were really nervous about going, and understandably, I guess, you know, I mean, New Orleans is a big city, and they were kind of a little shaky leaving the apartment. So I got a little bit nervous, and then we got to the bus station, and I don't know whether it was just going on the trip or what, but all their English absolutely left them, and they just stood like this in the bus station. And I bought their ticket for them, you know, and got them all settled and showed them where the bus was going to come in and everything. And, you know, I just hated to leave them. I thought, well, I just better get on the bus and go with them to make sure they get there all right. But they not only got there, they had a wonderful time. It's just, as soon as they got there, they stayed right in the French Quarter and they bought a Civil War bullet.
Civil War bullet.
They came back with a Civil War bullet. So I said, did you like New Orleans? Oh, yes, said Pierre. We bought Civil War bullets. Civil War, my eye. It's like buy a piece of the cathedral. But they had a good time. Now their thing is that they want to go to Pierre said they wanted to go to Birmingham and meet Governor Wallace. he knows who Governor Wallace is. I think I have to set him straight. He thinks that because George Wallace is a Rotarian that they can go and visit him. And I think I better explain to him who George Wallace is before they go all the way to Birmingham.
Well, they might make it.
They might. Just let them go.
You didn't know they'd come back from New Orleans.
I didn't think they'd come back from New Orleans. They might make it into Wallace's mansion. You don't know. They just might. Let them go.
But now they might.
They just might.
They're Rotary Scholars.
They're Rotary Scholars, and he's a Rotarian. And
we were at Debbie's this morning, Faye, weren't we? Or was that yesterday morning?
Yesterday morning.
We used your phone.
You stopped by yesterday morning.
I stopped by.
Mm-hmm. I didn't go in.
Oh, well, you just save the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't leave my tracks. A track. I don't believe. Did you see a track?
No, I don't think so. Mm. You usually do.
I looked around for something, but there's nothing came to me.
That's always kind of nice when I go back and there's a little track there.
Oh.
Yeah.
It is. I was always wanting to see what it'll be next time.
Oh.
I tested some of the speakers, talkers up there and on the way back. Of course, I was under some disadvantage. I didn't know any of them. I could see one thing in Knoxville. That's just the first trip I've made in some time, and you know, I can pay attention. And it was very easy to see. If I had stayed in Knoxville, or in that mid-south area where I was at home, they have a way of sort of patting you and pushing you just a little bit and giving you, edging you over a little bit. And you stay in the beaten path, and I wouldn't have minded if there would be something. I don't know what ever would have become of me. I could see it. I could see it just so plain. Some of my friends. And the way it was, he looked at me like John the Baptist. Big feet and all. That's the way he's in the poem. You know. I can talk real nice, just a little bit, just a couple of. And I don't, thinking ahead right now, right up there. Andy was a big politician in the state, and he finally got to be president. He stayed with us when we were at Vanderbilt once. He's from Peabody. And he got to be president of the university. And we went on a little tour. So he took me on his round one afternoon, and he went up to see one of his old friends. Man had a lumber company. I bought lumber there in my time. At a rest home, and it was won by the Seventh-day Adventists. And he just prayer back and praise that place, the man who was in it, Mr. Rose. And it didn't occur to me for a long time what the Seventh-day Adventists did. And I ran into them back in that time when I wrote that letter about Tibet. And one of the first things I remember was a field hospital that they had in Yunnan province, the Seventh-day Adventists.
Uh-huh.
They've got that marvelous restroom. Well, anyhow, we visited with, and I went along with that, and we had a pretty good talk. Andy actually didn't know what had happened, you see, because I go along with him now, and I didn't used to be able to do that. They didn't make the big difference. He had to show me his house. This sort of mansion overlooking the river, and the people who lived there, they had a daughter, and something or other happened. I don't know what it was, but the daughter had to move out, and they built her this place in the back. That's where Andy lives. And it is a handsome place. Andy went on his rounds, and he'd point out all these ponds where he fished. They belonged to one of the Coca-Cola men and others like that. We were standing in his house, and something was brought up about Ramsey. A man by the name of Ramsey wrote the Annals in the 1850s. Ramsey's Annals, that's a familiar term, name in Tennessee. I've read Ramsey's Annals and used them. And his home was not far off, built in the 1890s, stone, and they were going to make it a monument, a soft monument. I thought about what happened to the countryside once they have a sort of monument like Ms. Rawlins over there. The worst thing could happen to this place. And then I saw my old friend was up there visiting, Porter Henniger. Porter retired as executive secretary of the Southern Nurserymen's Association. Southern Nurserymen's Association. Mike Menthol. And he's been kind of a figurehead in Mike Menthol all his life. Look at him, he looks like a galoot. I just looked at his breeches when he stood up. He didn't have any seats on. He was a little overweight, you know, and his knees were baggy. You know, thank you, Mother. Russell was taking us around, and Russell takes you around. He took us up to see some apartments or condominiums or whatever they call them, up on a hill overlooking the whole city, and started $50,000, and then he took us to see the tower on this Buck Ridge or thing out there where the radio towers are. He took us all the way out there and climbed up the thing, rode up it in a jeep to see the tower. They had a three-legged tower, and he showed me one. They said this next one was going to be 1,000 feet higher than the one they had. 1,000 feet higher. And he showed me where it's going to be, and one little plot out there, and I thought, well, where's the other leg going? And I come to find out it wasn't going to have any other legs. It was going to stand on one leg. Tables, you see, would balance it on top. The antenna, you see, would be about 100 foot. Anyhow, on that little trip, Porter was, well, he was come to life. He was just flipping. And when he left, when he was leaving, he invited me to come over and spend some time with him. And I remember, well, I thought to myself, this is something. I'll go. And he even talked to Faye or somebody over the house there and told us again that he wanted you to come over and see him. Now that's that call, Debbie. And the tempting thing was, he goes around from coffee break to coffee break. And I could just picture that, just going around with him for 2 days, coffee break to coffee break. Get used to some of his buddies, people that you see and listen to him. And then you see, I could take a little tape along eventually and take down a little bit, just enough to go by, and I could report on and get out of the magazine on Porter and his friends over there in the nursery business and Mike Menlo. No end of what I could get from just that. And that's what I told Andy. I said, Andy, I said, now this is, that's one view of history. Now, another view of history I've just become acquainted with, you take Porter Henninger over there and go around in Mike Menville to those coffee breaks, and there's just no end of what you would hear. Why not? And it looked mighty sad. He got a long fish nose and sort of watery blue eyes. And he just says, well, everybody's entitled to his own view. I said, Andy, goddammit. I'm not denying your view of history, but I'm trying to tell you that they ain't the only one. Well, he says you always was smart. I said, Andy, you know damn well I never was smart. Nobody ever accused me of that.
Oh, Andy.
But now you see. He even stumps the old timers over there. That is amazing. I just had to keep my mouth shut.
Everything's a little too comfortable.
Oh, that's the truth.
Oh, yeah. This is, the Mid-South is just different.
I never, now, we on the way back, I was ready to come home. I'd had it. I was out 3 or 4 times a day.
Oh, listen, day and night.
Day and night, yes. And when I stayed at home, that was more strenuous than going out. So the life they led there. Just ate so much and left it out where you couldn't pass it out. I had a stomach ache half the time out there. See, here, I get it out of sight. I'm not tempted. I don't feel it.
Faye said, I don't know God likes those things so well. God said, I just can't get enough.
Biscuit?
She just pour everything down, you know. Everything.
Faye said to her, Mother, you just poison us all. She worked her over. Well, Faye kind of wanted to cruise around in Georgia and see if she could make contact with his son. I never had much luck on the weekend. That night, Saturday night, we finally wound up at a place where we stayed, found a motel. The old staunch place we used to stay so often, the motel in Perry. And see, everything about it is nice. The beds are comfortable, service is good, food is the best in Georgia, best I ever had. Reasonable. And, just think, and I get up in the morning, it's frosty morning, we walk around the old blocks where we used to walk and see the little narcissus coming out, and Sunday papers rolled up, and And you feel like, well, I've had a little touch of Georgia. But you haven't seen a single soul. All the people you've seen are the people you sit close to and are interested in, or fast on the hall. I see, that's one of your traps.
Mm-hmm.
You don't watch out, you see. That's what you do. Well, I was ready again Sunday morning to come over home and say, look, we better get over on 129. That's,
you
see, 41 is right on the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And 129 is over the way. But it still comes straight on down. That's where we used to come. In the good days of time. And nothing was happening. And I figured there was absolutely nothing to see on Sunday. 129. Except just pigs and all out of that. Well, sir, we finally made contact with the one thing that people do on Sunday, and that's eat Sunday dinner. And just by pure accident, in a place that I had never seen anything at, Fitzgerald. Right in the edge of town, coming in, I stopped at the service station. There was people were busy there. That's a good sign. And this young fella, kind of red-headed, he was busy, and I said, I just want a restaurant. And he was right direct and right moderately friendly, and I thought to myself later, hell, he's my contact. He's the man. If I come to Fitzgerald, he's the man. I don't have to go anywhere else. But anyhow, Johnny Dollars. It looked like a cheap department store right on the main street, on the square, undistinguishable from the other storefronts. All you could see up there was Johnny Dollar at the bottom and something that looked like a restaurant up above, a cafeteria. We walked in. And he was standing there, and he said, "Can I serve you? Can I help you?" And I said, he said, "We're just a little early. Just a very few minutes, and the food will be ready." Well, we said, "That's what we want, a little food." He said, "You have come to the right place, the best food in Georgia." Well, sir, we got there in time for the Sunday school. We had already taken our place. I couldn't be favored even a little bit. And the Sunday school guy came in. And he would greet him. Sometimes he'd open the door. Sometimes he'd just take him by the hand. Sometimes he would coax him a little bit. He said, "I knew you didn't want that plate. I knew you wanted the basket. In other words, she's not going to eat it there. She's going to put it in that little basket. It looks like an egg tray container. And then just the top closes up on it. Uh-huh. You take it home with you. All you can eat. All the thing will hold. Just take it with you. Same price." He was a red-headed. And he had that fluency. Just like an old medicine. And on the blue clothes, and his suit was sort of sharp-shouldered and padded, you know, and he put his hand sort of in his pocket like that, and he'd stick it up, and his skirt was cut high, and he would gag back there, you see. But he didn't pay my attention to that. Faith spoke to the one, his welcome. I went out, and he came on that to say if I was normally, if I was sick there, I wouldn't eat. They just and it was just about time for the church crowd to come. I just about to hold my head. That's so we didn't stay for the church car. There they all were, just a town and parade, you see. And there I was going through Georgia, thinking nothing happened on Sunday. Certainly not in Fitzgerald. There Mrs. Elkins was, and there the Johnny Dollar was, and the boy of Baptist Service.
I said, this is the best greens I ever ate. She said it's fresh. So we need to keep it fresh, and I always took it with ham hocks, and said, everybody tells us this is the best food you can get anywhere. And I tried to say, so she did the cooking. And she also saw that you had your dessert and your drink. If you didn't want coffee, you sure wanted iced tea. But anyway, you had a drink and a dessert there. And she came over, she said, I want you to go back and get some more. And she was filming it to everybody in there. She began talking.
They went back and talked. You know, you have to sort of get into it and start with. We wound up at Fort Valley. That was one of the garden spots. But you know, the things change. Now Terry, we came into town on one side, and we pulled up to this motel. It sold out all but one room, and they didn't have a key for that. She'd have to let us have the master key, but she'd have to have it back. That's all that spared, saved us from that travel lodge. And what happened was, what was a travel lodge doing out there all by itself? Well, a block away was I-75.
Well,
we just had presence of mind enough to keep on going through the town. We wound up right in the Perry Motel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now what that does, and then the next morning we went out on the other side of town, and there's all sorts of lodges out there. So they have to, for the Perry Motel to exist, and it flourishes, I think, still, all their old customers have to cut through this whole battery of modern equipment brought there, like McDonald's hamburger stands, you see, by the interstate. So the interstate, you'd think, is a good thing, but it's it destroys. I haven't destroyed McNovid, but it's, you see, that interchange isn't ambitious enough, I suppose, to have much effect on it.
And people don't come into Micanopy that way. I mean, they're not. It's not as if the interstate's bringing people in on with a main highway.
Yeah.
So it's different.
I stopped at the in that first little town. I wasn't that night before. First time we slowed down. And you got to get broken in. And there was a drugstore on one side and a police station on the other. Faye's a lover of drugstores. And she went over and had a marvelous time. I went to the police station and talked to the policeman. And he tried to help me. I had one or two little leads, but Saturday night nothing was worried. Well,
I remember there was just a beautiful little hotel, little family hotel in Fort Valley, and I used to love Fort Valley. And I knew that Perry Motel, the hotel at Perry, was like it was, but it still had. I thought, you know, if we could stay in a little family hotel in Fort Valley, we'd learn a little more. And that's what we were headed for. It is no longer the hardware store now. And this star of the drugstore had big time talking with. He had a feeling too. He'd get off of I-75 if he could. But he just had to get ready for him. 5 hours is about as much as he liked I-75.
A long time. Deadly.
Well, you see, it's very hard just saying a word of what to do and what you've done. I just see, I was going to contact Jim McConkie or several of the people I used to work with, and see, they're all busy, and I'm at a loss as to what tack to follow. I just don't know. You see, there's so much, and I can't start out and say what we did out here. There's too much, and I can't say something like this. Nobody believes it. And you say, well, what a flathead is that to think it is. People can't do the same, but they can. They don't notice it, they don't think of it in the first place. They think they go to a motel and satisfy, and they think they've seen Georgia. Done all the time over on the Gold Coast and those big hotels over there. Why else would they have them? You don't need to know anybody. You got a full-time job just taking in the hotel. And if you know them, that's no occasion. You say everybody's not alike. It's your place.
And the trap is that we just loved it. We loved going back to the Perry. You know, everything was so beautiful and everything was so comfortable. And we just sank into this good bed. And the food was so marvelous. And
great
and
relief.
It was just such a relief that here was somebody that everybody was taking care of us. And the woman at the desk looked just exactly like she did 8 years ago when I stopped by, whenever it was the last time I stopped by. And I said, you know, this is like coming home. She said, everybody says that, you know, and if we replace the drapes or the rugs or anything, we try to do it as
the way it
was old, to make it look exactly as it did when we first started. And you see, the coffee was superb, the food is superb, and the prices are reasonable. And you're simply, well, you need to go every once in a while, but you need to know that you're not seeing, you know, you're not talking to people.
I ran into this old friend. I didn't run into him. Remembered him, looked him up, and he writes books about his experiences, his regulations. And he drove over there one afternoon and talked a little bit. And I tell you what, it's remarkable thing. The book, the book is pretty dull, but it's quiet. It interests him. But he don't know how to bring life. And what we did, we talked there, and I had that critical approach that he didn't have. Because he had the experiences that I didn't have. So we could just got together, we would really wrote a book. He would relate something, you see, and I would come along with that little point that would bring it out. Now here's an example of how it works. I forget it for a bit. During that first school year of mine, I learned so many things, some of which were not in books, that I feel I can truthfully say my life then had its beginning. Therefore, I had been close enough to run to Mama, there before, for discovery. She was always there. Here at school, I was forced to bear up under whatever difficulty I faced. Often, of course, I thought of her. In fact, I gradually became proud of myself for being able to. I was naive, gullible, even to the point of showing an utter. Yes, here it is. That's cute. I was naive, gullible, even to the point of showing an utter lack of good sense at times. Surely some of my classmates must have looked upon me as a simpleton, if not a downright moron. Sometimes I acted as if I hadn't a brain cell in my head. There was a day, for instance, when the big Rhode Island red rooster came right up into the doorway on the boys' side of the school. I had gone back to the bucket, which was placed on a little bench near the door, to get a drink of water. And just as I was returning to my seat, the rooster stepped up, eyed the situation inside the schoolroom with obvious curiosity, and then let out a resounding cock-a-doodle-doo. I was looking him over, thoroughly enjoying his intrusion, and the whole school, including the teacher, were enjoying mine and the rooster's behavior. And the schoolmaster said, "Tell him to come in." I stepped closer to the door where the rooster stood and faithfully communicated the message. He said to come in. As long as Hayes Alexander lived on the earth, this earth, he enjoyed telling that story at my expense. All right. Now you say that doesn't liven you up too much. But you see, the thing of it is, and that works for the big ones as well as the little ones. See, they were simple, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And something, and a little thing, no bigger than this, you see, would just be passed from one person to another, year after year. And it's I don't know what it is, but what the words are that it shows about that world. But that is Hoyta. And you can't say that that's flat. That's just the heart of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see. And if you've got a little critical start on it, you see, you can get back and enjoy the thing yourself. There he is watching the rooster, you see, and the rooster lets out this cock-a-doodle-doo. And the schoolmaster picks it up. And he tells the little boy, he just started school, you see, to invite him in. And then he walks up to the rooster. He says, come in. So you see, with my little critical start.
Turns the whole thing.
Yeah.
With his incidents, you.
Is there something?
You might have something.
Hello, Bertie.
Who?
Oh, when you have Barbara. No.
And
no.
She got her letter in the mail today.
Oh, she's
going to have
it next.
At least she left there with several letters on her hand.
We don't know if she mailed them.
She got that. All the way.
Well. It just takes such a little thing to bring that whole chicken.
It's a little thing,
isn't it? It is. I was just thinking, it takes such a little bit to make something like that interesting. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be labor. That's what everything I deal with is so labored at the campus.
Well, of course, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, that was the
be offended if you said it was.
His first diagnosis, but I know from my
she knows pretty much.
She read all the diagnosis from the that came over from the hospital. They just sent it to her, and so she sat and read it.
We read it
together. Or I read it. She read it. We didn't understand it.
Well, I don't understand very much of what I read anymore. Anyway,
yeah. Medication can be
helpful. I understand.
And I have an idea, they'll let you know.
I'll let you know what. Wait, Bob will let you know.
You told him all the time.
He thought it turned off. And he said that Bob would keep it up to date.
I see.
Of course, he did say if I had any further questions, I'd be right to. So we'll wait. I'll see. Wait. I want to wait to see what. I just feel that we have done something unbearable burden on you, guys.
Oh my goodness, we had a fine time.
Because,
you don't worry about that.
Well, I didn't realize that how much was involved when we allowed her to do this. However, she, as I said, she is 27 years old. I don't know what say we have and what she does.
How is Jack going to stay away from Glendale Springs a week?
Jack, I think at the moment he's so thankful to be out of pain that he's willing to stay away from any pain.
What kind of pain did he have?
Well, in the first place, he wasn't in the voice for 3 nights.
Yeah.
And then he said it was like having a knife stabbed in him every time he did, even a drop or two.
Bertie, I've been right there.
Couldn't you hear them to you?
Good night. Guy, they wouldn't give me a cat.
I was at the hospital, and guy said, if they don't give me something, I'm going to bust this hospital down.
Well, that's the first thing they did for that.
Guys over here say, well, what's he complaining about? Now you can both. It's not funny, but what
you've both been through, it is something.
Talking too much.
All right.
3 more days.
Yeah.
It's a permanent part of it.
You tell him, Jack.
You talk too much.
He said, I've got to go to the bathroom. I said, Jack, you can't, you don't have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, shoot. And she said Jack was worried about her so much that he wouldn't tell her. And she said, that's just like Barbara. He's protecting me, and it'd be a lot better if he'd tell me. So for 3 days, he was in all this pain. And they could have had him down there 3 days earlier.
Well, if it happened, it doesn't matter. That's a ticklish piece of surgery. I'd hate to be the surgeon on that.
Yeah.
Or you can go wrong so easily.
Yeah. First and that he was so sick for the night, that's why he couldn't talk with you. They called him out. But you see, she was laughing when we stopped, so she had just come in the hospital.
I've never even seen him. I've seen him too. That's the second train tonight.
Sometimes they come like that.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, it's bedtime.
This is all working, girl.
No, that's not. Well.
Well, thank you, Babby. I'll.
Well, it's just. A little scary.
Did you pick out any particular one?
He said that the thing to do is if you wrote to Iowa, that they'd send you lists of every other place to write to. Just write to them. That is, I was thinking about it for a while, but I don't know. I can't pick out any of those people that I want to go study with. So how could I possibly pick a school to go to? It's absurd.
That's right.
I'll see you.
Smells like orange out here.
Have it out.
Oh, I just full of oranges. I've got plenty. They smell good.
Yeah.
Out here. I just got a whole lot more. You know Lewis Haynes? He's in Logic. He's my Helen's husband. And he just gave me about 6 bushels of oranges. He does not stop talking. I walked in the house and he didn't stop. Huh?
Oh, really?
I thought he was this silent person. Everybody says, oh, Bill Haynes never talks. He did not pause. From the time I came in, and Phoebe was sitting in the car. We just stopped by to get these oranges, and Phoebe was sitting in the car, and he talked constantly. And I had said when I came in, well, we just stopped by, and about 30 minutes later, he realized that I said, we, and he said, oh, there's somebody else with you? And I said, well, yeah, my sister's in the car. Oh, he said, well. I mean, Phoebe didn't care, and I didn't care, but it was another 30 minutes before I got out. Constant. Just constant.
Yeah.
What kind of is he
there?
He's just got juice oranges.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, mosquito bit me.
Oh.
One.
And that's why those
Channel one over. That's the end of the talk. Debbie's visit and my talk with her this Wednesday at supper, the 8th of January, 75. Channel one over, around almost 1800. Channel one over, almost 1800. And the end of the visit with Debbie, with me talking to this Wednesday after supper, the 8th of January, 75.